We are joined now live on the show by the Archbishop of San Francisco, Salvatore Cordiglione. Your Excellency, thank you for joining us on the program. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule. How are you?
I'm doing fine, fighting the good fight. Thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, you're most welcome. You're most welcome. And Your Excellency, you're originally from San Diego, but your father,
yes,
Leon, was originally born in San Francisco, where you now serve, and he was involved in a family fishing business. And, you know, to me, it sounds a little bit maybe like the Zebedee and Sons Fishing Company from the Gospels. But tell us a little bit about your upbringing, about your parents, and maybe how you first got an inkling that God was calling you to be a fisher of people in the priesthood.
Yes, well, my paternal grandfather was a fisherman from Sicily, and he immigrated here with my grandmother. He landed first in San Francisco. I later discovered after living here that this often happened with the Italian immigrants. They'd settle here, and then some stayed, obviously, but others would move on to other locations, especially the fishermen. My grandfather's case, it's a cold, damp climate here, so he needed a place that was warm and dry where he could keep fishing. So my father was actually born here. I found out he was born a couple blocks down from the curvy part of Lombard Street, that famous crookedest street in the world.
Okay.
And but he was 4 years old. Yeah. So it was that's North Beach, you know, the Italian section. But after my grandparents stayed about 10 years, and then they moved the family south to San Diego. So my father was about 4 years old, and he really grew up in San Diego. But back, he was the last generation where it worked this way, that the fathers learned the trade from their father. The sons learned the trade from their father and then continued the trade going. So my father had three brothers, and they were all in the fishing industry in some way or another, at least for the first part of their working lives. So I grew up with my father as a fisherman, and I grew up very close to all of my relatives. Those grandparents actually lived right next door to us, so I saw them all the time. And my mother's parents lived just a few miles away, and all my cousins were nearby, so... So it was a very much of a family-friendly environment, and preserving a lot of the old kind of cultures and cultural realities and practices of the Sicilian culture that I grew up in. So these kind of values of family first, and family being together, and going to church, you know, working hard and trying to get a good education, all those good wholesome values were pretty much inculcated in us.
And what about a call to the priesthood? When did you first start to sense those inklings?
I was going to say, it was more like toward the end of high school, and I was discerning that in my first year of college. So, growing up there in San Diego, and with my father in the fishing industry, I was down on the waterfront a lot. And San Diego's a big Navy town, and was even more so then with the Naval Training Center there. That kind of got into my imagination. So I was growing up, I was aspiring more to do a career of serving my country, like in the Navy or in the military or something like that.
Wow.
But I started getting, my faith was always important to me, though. You know, I never went through a phase of doubting or stopping practicing my faith. Even as a teenager, I'd go to church on my own. But toward the end of high school, I was getting more, I guess, seriously spiritual. I was grappling with the kind of the big questions of life, of why God put me here, what was I supposed to accomplish with my life. And I got up the nerve to speak to the young priest at my parish, who was an inspiration to me as well, and sent me on a vocation retreat at our local college-level seminary there in San Diego. And then that pretty much opened the door. I got to know the seminarians, got to know other young men thinking about the call, and got a better sense of what seminary life was like. And since the thought kept nagging at me, you know, God is the great nagger, it wouldn't go away, I knew I had to go into the seminary to test the call.
Absolutely. And obviously you clearly did go on to be ordained a priest and also a bishop. And in your Episcopal work, you've really covered the entire Bay Area, as you were appointed the Bishop of Oakland in 2009 by Pope Benedict XVI. And in 2012, he appointed you as Archbishop of San Francisco. Obviously, Pope Benedict XVI means a lot to you personally. You helped to found the Benedict XVI Institute. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in a few minutes. But what struck you the most about him as a person? And what sticks out to you most in your mind about his sublime teaching throughout the years?
He has an amazing capacity to sum up volumes of wisdom in like pithy phrases. and he states things so clearly and in such a balanced way. So he's a very, obviously, he's a very deep thinker. You know, his trilogy on Jesus of Nazareth, you know, is so, it digs so deeply into the scriptures and draws it out, but in a way that's easily comprehensible. You know, one doesn't have to be a professional theologian to understand the profound realities he's exposing there. So it's that kind of that, the depth of thought and clarity of thought and the way he can say it so neatly, sort of. And also his personal witness. I mean, I've been privileged to be in his presence a number of times, even when he was Cardinal Ratzinger, and know what, I mean, he has a certain public persona, but it doesn't cohere at all to what the real Joseph Ratzinger is like.
That's right.
He's so mild-mannered, you know, and so respectful of others. He listens very well. You know, he's humble and he's witty as well. So he's just a wonderful man of the church. And I sense in a lot of his writings, you know, toward in his pontificate and toward the end of his time as a cardinal, with things going on in the church and in society, especially in Europe, I can sense, you know, the world that he grew up in Bavaria, back when he was growing up, it was such a deep Catholic culture. It must have been like a Catholic wonderland.
Yeah.
I imagine that being in his imagination growing up, you know, those wonderful German Catholic traditions with, at, you know, Christmas time and so celebrating the kind of the cycle of the year, there's so much beauty in that. And I can sense that in his soul, and I can sense the sense of a mourning that Europe has turned its back on that and kind of it's failed in its call now to be a light to the world of the profound truth of Christianity. So his kind of his personal witness along with his thought is what really appeals to. And then, of course, his writings on the liturgy, where he's really has helped us a great momentum for authentic liturgical renewal with much deeper insights with that as well.
I'm joined by Archbishop Salvatore Cordeleone of San Francisco on the program on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Yeah, a lot, he's been so misconstrued throughout the years by his critics. You know, people called Pope Benedict XVI, you know, the Panzer Cardinal, God's Rottweiler. But his personality, as you alluded to in your prior answer, was not like that at all. A great listener. You hear that time and time again. Of course, as you also mentioned, he's written so much about Europe and the loss of faith in Europe. And obviously that is trickling down to North America as well. You live in and you minister in one of the most secular cities in the world, one of the most, you know, really, let's face it, pagan cities in the world. How do you deal with that as you're shepherding your flock? And what encouragement can you give to Catholics who are living in the midst of such a secular society?
Well, Pope Benedict is one whom I take some inspiration and guidance from there. And just to bear witness to the faith and try to, again, teach clearly, but live that in my life. And there's still, you know, San Francisco has gone through a massive transformation in the last 50, 60 years. It used to be a very Catholic city. And there still are a lot of vestiges, even after all this time, a lot of vestiges of that, especially through our Catholic school system, through our Catholic charities organizations. There's still a lot of fingerprints of the Catholic era of San Francisco. So I think our people need to be aware of that and to be proud of that. San Francisco has also always been an immigrant city. Earlier on, it was Irish and Italian. More recently, it's immigrants from Mexico and Central America and the Philippines and other parts of Asia. Chinese immigration is obviously is the major one that's been the consistent immigration factor all throughout the city's history. So, but now with the more recent waves of immigration, we're getting many more immigrants who come from a Catholic background. So I think there is still a lot of potential to tap into if people live their faith well. So I'm encouraging them to live out the consecration at the request of some parishioners here. We had a year of preparation for a consecration of the Archdiocese to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. This was 3 years ago. It was on the Feast of Our Lady of Rosary, but close to the 100th anniversary of the apparitions of Fatima, where Our Lady revealed herself as the Immaculate Heart. So we prepared for it through catechesis and spiritual preparation, and now I'm asking our people to live out the consecration. So I keep returning to this theme of praying the rosary every day, praying the rosary as a family at least once a week, adoration of the Blessed Sacrament at least 1 hour a week. Many parishes are able to have exposition, if not, at least to pray before the tabernacle.
Yeah.
And then to fast. Our Lady is always calling us, right, to pray the rosary, to adore her Son in the Blessed Sacrament, and to fast. So I'm calling on our people, and have been, and have reemphasized that, to fast seriously on Friday. A fast, traditionally, a fast means just one meal in the day, and that's mm-hmm. all. Now the Church allows to take a little bit of food to other times, but I've asked people to do this seriously, not mm-hmm. just give up something as a token sign, that if possible, you know, skip one whole meal or skip two meals and have just one meal, whatever their health would allow. So I think we need to recuperate this sense of fasting and of penance as well. So I'm asking our people to participate spiritually in this way, and to bear witness to their faith through the way they live it in their life day in and day out.
You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Our guest today is Archbishop Salvatore Cordeleone of San Francisco. And Your Excellency, obviously you've been mentioned a lot in the news cycle lately. You've been very vocal personally about the restrictions, which many feel are draconian in nature, that have been imposed by the city of San Francisco and Mayor London Breed on religious gatherings in the city, with services limited to 12 people, including the celebrant, and that they must be held outdoors. For everybody listening who may not be aware of the situation, what has been your response to this and that of the Archdiocese in light of these events?
At first, you know, there was a lot of panic because of the uncertainty of this virus and the danger of it, and the shelter in place orders were very strict. Mm-hmm. And it made more sense to me then that we'd be a little more draconian, to use your appropriate word. But it's time now it is especially so because we understand it more, and there's been more loosening up of restrictions for others, but not for us. And so now what the city would say is that they're treating everyone equally because 12 applies to all outdoor gatherings. The problem is they've allowed street protests to continue without a limit on the number, and sometimes they're not even socially distancing. And not only have allowed it, but the city has participated in these street protests. Mm-hmm. So they let those go on. And I suppose you can say freedom of assembly is the First Amendment right, but so is the freedom to worship.
Right.
but somehow that doesn't apply to us. They allow people to go into the parks. They have circles in the parks that are 6 feet apart. People have to stay in the circles. But there's crowds of people in the park that they're not always keeping the 6 feet apart, but they're allowing that to go on without cracking down. So there's this uneven application, even though they say it applies to everyone, mm-hmm. there's very much of an unequal application, and very much of a, you have to question if they're really following science. What difference does it make if it's 12, 100, or why is there any limit at all? Mm-hmm. In California, the counties can issue their own regulations that are stricter than what the state allows. San Mateo County is the county south of San Francisco. San Mateo County has no limit on outdoor gatherings. So I'd say this must be a really smart virus to know if people are standing in San Francisco County or San Mateo County. You know, they're just a few blocks apart. So it seems so arbitrary.
Yeah, absolutely.
The city has now just said, okay, go ahead.
Go ahead, Your Excellency.
I was going to say the city now yesterday announced going into this next phase of opening up for businesses and activities to now they're going to allow 50 for outdoor gatherings. Mm-hmm. But again, why 50? Why not 100? Why a limit at all as long as the outdoor space can accommodate it? And to allow, ready for this, to allow one person at a time inside a church to pray.
Wow.
In the meantime, they're allowing indoor one-on-one services such as hair salons, nail salons, massage parlors, mm-hmm. these kinds of things are allowed to operate one-on-one indoors. But in a church, only one person at
wow.
a time.
That is truly shocking. With Archbishop Salvatore Codiglione, the Archbishop of San Francisco, joining us live on the Cale Clark Show right now. And Your Excellency, where I live in the Archdiocese of Toronto, which is led by Cardinal Thomas Collins, we're a city of 6 million people. The churches have been open for some time for daily and Sunday Mass, and they've enforced strict protocols in terms of social distancing, mask wearing indoors. And I think, you know, the churches are probably the safest places you can be. You go into a shopping mall and social distancing is simply not happening. But I find the churches have been very, very good with sanitizing and keeping people safe. I'm not aware of any case that's happened in our city since the churches have opened. Does this seem like, I hate to say this, but is there an undercurrent of anti-Catholicism here? Why pick on the churches in this regard?
There certainly seems to be. And I've made that point that you just made. I've been making that repeatedly. And in fact, a recent study published by three specialists in infectious diseases, they studied a million masses over about a 14-week period that were following the protocols that most of our churches are following. Here, I think in Canada as well, certainly here in the United States, it's guidance from the Thomistic Institute. They said that churches following those safety protocols, in a million masses, there was not one infection that was traceable to a mass.
Right.
So I've been making that point. Our churches can be very safe, safer than any other indoor space. And I brought this up to city officials as well. I brought up the outdoor question, why only 12, and you let the protests go on without any kind of limit or regulation. And then the city has allowed indoor retail at 50% capacity. And I said, why? They said, well, you know, in a store, you go in, you make the purchase, and you leave. And I understand this principle. People inside the same space for an extended period of time, the virus circulates more, and there's a greater danger of infection. But I said, these larger outlets, they can easily stay in there an hour or 2 hours, even 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we could keep our services brief. If necessary, we could keep it to within an hour and then take all these other safety measures of keep the doors and windows open for airflow. The people are stationary, right? And the church is not moving around like they are in a store, bumping into each other and touching everything. We could, right. They're stationary, 6 feet apart, wearing masks, sanitizing between services. I said, you know, that it's much safer, actually, inside of a church than in these large retail outlets. The only response I got was, it's much, much safer to do it outdoors.
With so Archbishop.
They're obviously not following the science.
Yeah, exactly. And
they're
applying
the science evenly, I should say.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. We're with Archbishop Salvatore Codiglione of San Francisco, live on the Cale Clark Show, joining us. And what is a practical thing that people can do in San Francisco and maybe even beyond the borders of the city, specifically talking about the petition that is up at the website of the Benedict XVI Institute? So tell us a little bit about that, and then also about the Institute, why it got started, and what is it all about?
I'm very grateful for the Institute for launching this petition drive. It was following up on a statement I made calling on the mayor to open up for mass, and we're trying to find creative ways while technically keeping within the health order, like we're having multiple outdoor masses on our cathedral plaza. So several masses going on at one time. So there are a lot of people gathered there, but there are gatherings of 12, and now we can go up to 50. So Benedict XVI Institute launched this petition drive, asking people to sign a petition to back up my call to the mayor to open up for mass and treat us fairly as they're treating others. People can go online to sign that petition at the Institute's webpage, benedictinstitute.org. They can link into there and sign the petition. Latest I've heard, we have over 3,000 people who have signed the petition.
Oh, fantastic.
But the Institute, so it's gaining a lot of momentum. And we're continuing to strategize with creative ways to witness our faith and make it known that, you know, God is essential. Worship is essential. The government has no right to tell us what's essential and what's not when it comes to religious affairs. That pertains to the church and its own affairs. The government's role is to let us know what we need to do to keep our people safe. And we submitted our safety protocols back in May, and stores did, and they got theirs approved, and they went into operation. Mm-hmm. We haven't heard back with ours.
Wow.
So anyway, that's the background of the petition, sponsored by the Benedict XVI Institute for Sacred Music and Divine Worship. I found it in order to, well, under the title of Pope Benedict, who's been such a great leader in liturgical renewal, to give more emphasis to liturgical renewal in a way that can also affect what's really going on in our parishes. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to give parishes resources for more reverent and beautiful liturgies, and also to revitalize the Catholic culture of the arts. There are a lot of different initiatives we've taken on. We have an online magazine, Catholic Arts Today, featuring the work of Catholic artists. We have a chant camp for kids. We have a teaching choir to teach parishes how to sing chant. And the latest thing is we're starting to commission new compositions of music for Mass that are sacred, but also incorporate kind of cultural themes of the time we're living in. The first one was this Mass of the Americas, which was a twin tribute to Our Lady of the Immaculate Conception and Our Lady of Guadalupe. December 8th, 2 years ago, was on a Saturday, and it was the day in December that we have a celebration for Our Lady of Guadalupe all throughout the Archdiocese. So it was a time to hold up Our Lady as a force for unity of God's children, right? So it's sacred music, but it's a new composition, and it has kind of a new feel to it. I asked our composer-in-residence, Frank LaRocca, to incorporate the themes, the melodies, the sounds of the popular songs that the Mexican people sing to honor Our Lady of Guadalupe. And those melodies and sounds are woven all throughout the music. So it's a truly beautiful composition to the music as a way to unify us and open the door to beauty, because beauty is the door that leads to an encounter with Christ.
Your Excellency, we have to take a quick break here. Can you hang with us on the phone just through this quick break? We have some more we'd like to ask you after the break. Is that possible?
Sure.
Okay, fantastic. We'll be right back with Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans are available at relevantradio.com/forester.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to the program. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show, as Julie just said, on Relevant Radio. And we are joined live by Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione, the Archbishop of San Francisco. And we've been having a great conversation about everything that's going on in the Archdiocese of San Francisco. And we were talking before the break about the Benedict XVI Institute. And Your Excellency, you wanted to share a little bit more about that to our listeners.
Yes, I left off speaking about the beauty as a way to encounter Christ. We have the mm-hmm. three transcendentals, right? The truth, beauty, and goodness. Mm. These are paths of evangelization. Bishop Barron speaks about them as doors that open up to the encounter with Christ. And some people will be drawn more toward one door and walk through that, and others toward another. There are people who actually read themselves into the church. They walk through the door of truth. And I think that path of evangelization has developed quite a bit over the last many years. We have new catechetical resources. We have other resources for evangelization, such as, well, what we're doing right now. We have a lot of great Catholic programming now. So the path of beauty, of truth, I think has been developed quite a bit. The Church has always served the poor and been a leader in that, and advocating for the rights of vulnerable people. So the door of goodness has always been wide open. But I haven't seen a lot focused on this door of beauty. The door has been pretty much closed, maybe just a little teensy-weensy bit ajar, but I wanted to open it wide. Bishop Barron speaks about this, too. He called it the via pulchritudinis, that is, the way of beauty. Open that door wide. So we see how this works, especially with young people. You know, young people, they love the beautiful music, the beautiful liturgies. They love that tradition, and it's not something superficial. The externals, I think, help to engage the imagination. They capture the attention. and as a way of drawing the person in more deeply to the realities they're expressing. So to provide resources to parishes and to hold up sacred beauty as a way to bring people into that encounter with Christ. So I spoke about these new compositions for Masses, the Mass of the Americas. We've asked Frank to compose another one. Now, we were supposed to celebrate it this November, but with the restrictions, we weren't able to. November, because in the Archdiocese, we started having a memorial mass for people who have died homeless. Mm-hmm. So I asked Mr. LaRocca to compose a requiem mass for the homeless.
Beautiful.
To somehow, again, this is sacred music, but incorporate cultural themes into it in a coherent way. So to kind of, through the music, capture that sense of fear and instability of life on the streets. So I told him to, what I wanted him to do was, with the sense of sound through music, what the Franciscan missionaries did here with the sense of sight through architecture. If you think of a mission church.
Right.
Now, a mission church is a traditional Catholic church, but it's a new style of church architecture that reflects the local culture. Well, they had to use the building materials available here, adobe, but also, you know, the colors and the style of art that developed around it. It very much reflects the local culture, but in a coherent way and keeping with Catholic tradition. That's what I asked them to do with music. This is what really authentic enculturation is. Now we're about to start another new initiative, especially with the recent attacks on Junipero Serra. That's very, very distressing.
Yes.
So we want to commission new works of art celebrating St. Junipero Serra and other American saints. And we're contracting with an art scholar and theologian who can digitalize sacred spaces to digitalize the 9 missions founded by Father Serra and then have a virtual tour of that. So the scholar Amy Giuliani is also making other presentations of sacred works of art and sacred spaces. People could get information on that as well on our website, benedictinstitute.org.
Yeah, and the work of the Benedict XVI Institute in the Archdiocese is just so powerful, attracting people through truth, goodness, and beauty. We were with Archbishop Salvatore Cordeleone, the Archbishop of San Francisco, joining us live on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. And before we let you go, Your Excellency, and we thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us and talk to our listeners. Speaking of music, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about your lifelong love of jazz. I'm kind of a Miles Davis, John Coltrane kind of guy myself. What sparked this for you, and who are some of your favorite artists?
We are bosom buddies, then. Well, you really did your research on me. So I don't know where this came from, but when I was a child, I was just fascinated with the music, that musical genre, the jazz drum beat and the brass. Mm-hmm. Then it just resonated with me. So I was attracted, and then the complexity of the music with the chords, and then they got into the modes, right?
Right.
So they improvising is based on improvisation. The jazz chords became very expanded and developed. Then at a certain point, they wanted to find new avenues for improvisation, so they developed this modal jazz, speaking of Miles Davis. So,
yeah,
Miles Davis, John Coltrane, of course, and Art Pepper, Eric Dolphy, and Paul Desmond, a little different kind of a sound. Those were kind of the ones who I looked up to. I was a saxophone player in high school and college, so they were the ones I was trying to emulate.
Wow, that's amazing. I have to ask you, Your Excellency, have you ever tried to show up incognito at a jazz club in San Francisco, or do you bring your shepherd staff?
Well, as the jazz musicians would say, I would have to do a lot of woodshedding before doing that. Go out in the woodshed and practice.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? But the more I got into it, then understanding, then I got fascinated with kind of the musicology side of it, of how this music developed. You know, and I, especially what we're dealing with now in the country with this issue of racism, mm-hmm. how, you know, the work songs of the slaves in the fields and the Negro spiritual that developed into gospel music, mm-hmm. how they wedded that with, you know, European music, and the Negro street musicians improvising with instruments they could get a hold of in the streets, and this whole new genre began, and it's such a beautiful type of a music and a uniquely American art form. And
It
was produced by people who were oppressed, you know,
exactly.
And they could make this joyful sound unto the Lord. So it's the history and sociology, the musicology side of it is something I also find fascinating.
Oh, it certainly is. And listen, Your Excellency, all of our Relevant Radio family, all of our listeners, we promise to keep you in our prayers as you not only deal with the fight to lift restrictions on the celebration of the Eucharist, but also with the devastating impact that's going on in California with the wildfires in San Francisco. We've all seen the very eerie apocalyptic images, you know, that have been sent out. And it's funny, even people's cell phone cameras can't even pick up the true color of the sky, because even the machine is saying, no, it's really not that red, and it kind of auto-corrects it to a different color. But how can people help if they want to get involved in relief efforts?
Well, certainly with support through prayer, and I guess we have our relief agencies that are trying to assist people, and they're different dioceses. Practically every diocese is affected by these fires now, so they could maybe contact through the Catholic Charities Agency mm-hmm. to see what relief work they might be doing to support them in that.
Well, we'll certainly keep you in our prayers, and we want to remind our listeners to go to benedictinstitute.org. We've also tweeted a website link from our show account at Cale Clark Show on Twitter. We'll put it in the show notes too. And before you go, Your Excellency, would you impart your apostolic blessing to all of our listeners over the air, please?
With pleasure. May the blessing of Almighty God come down upon you and remain with you forever, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Archbishop Salvatore Cordeleone, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, and God bless you in your apostolic ministry.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.